two of European football's most successful clubs are into the semi-finals. Real Madrid showed their familiar class and cutting edge to win at Chelsea and knock them out. The 14-time champions march on, as do the seven-time champions AC Milan, who held on just to eliminate Italian rivals Napoli. We look ahead to Bayern, Manchester City, Inter, Benfica, and break down a dramatic night in the UEFA Champions League. Welcome along, I'm Rob Daly, and delighted to say the former Arsenal, Chelsea, Juve and England striker Leanne Sanderson is alongside me to break down Tuesday night's action. Leanne, Real Madrid, AC Milan, European royalty into the semi-finals.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it makes sense to a certain degree. Obviously, we covered the Chelsea-Real Madrid game and the quality just shone through in the end. I felt for Chelsea because they gave it a good go. But I think, you know, all the tyres are now set up. We've got another incredible day and game of games tomorrow as well.
We certainly do. Okay, a quick reminder of how things unfolded on Tuesday night in the second legs of our quarterfinals. Chelsea 0, Real Madrid 2, 4-0 on aggregate the win. Napoli 1, AC Milan 1, the Rossoneri going through 2-1 on aggregate. More on that game shortly, but to Stamford Bridge first, where Chelsea were looking to recover from a two-goal deficit against the defending champions Real Madrid. Leanne was alongside Mark Scott watching the action.
Reece James crossing position, good ball in, Kukurea surely saved by Courtois. A massive moment in the game and Chelsea can't convert. Rodrigo gets to the byline, real chance here, across, Benzema misses it, it's Vinicius Junior and now Rodrigo, it's in and surely it's all over now. Real Madrid take a 3-0 aggregate lead in the quarter-final against Chelsea.
You could just feel that this Real Madrid team would do something. They always seem to. They don't even have to play well. Chelsea played really well, but now they're 3-0 down. It's too late.
At the edge of the area, Valverde, lovely footwork, and squares it, and it's going to be another goal for Rodrigo. Absolutely magnificent from Madrid, who are surging into the semi-finals of the Champions League yet again. 2-0 on the night, 4-0 Madrid on aggregate, as Stamford Bridge empties out.
Great play from Valverde, goes past Thiago Silva, like he's not even there, not many people can do that. Nice little pass across, and who's there to tap it in? Rodrigo yet again.
Yeah, two goals for Rodrigo was the difference on the night, and Real Madrid's quality shines through again. Commentator Mark Scott joins Leanne and myself. Now, a quick reminder, Chelsea, remember this relatively pragmatic-looking lineup, didn't they, Mark? 3-5-1-1, only Havertz to recognise for Madrid unchanged. But the Blues really came out flying.
Yeah, that's right, Rob. Certainly there were some raised eyebrows at the lineup that Frank Lampard went with. Given that Chelsea came into it 2-0 down, needed goals, it looked pragmatic. It looked like a team set up to contain rather than score goals to get themselves back into the game. But it worked, actually. They had Madrid penned in. They had their chances, two or three really good ones in the first half. So you could say that the game plan for Chelsea worked to a large extent because Madrid didn't really click into life at all. And if Marc Cucurella or N'Golo Conte had taken opportunities that had come their way in the first half, they might have gone in at halftime level on aggregate. They didn't. And then in the second half, Real Madrid showed their ruthless clinical class.
Yeah, I think Chelsea's game plan was pretty good to start off with. I think they played the best I've seen them play. It sounds weird saying that now because they lost 4-0 over on aggregate, but I think they started the game really well. I think they looked organised. The only concern for me was, I mean, Camavinga was brilliant, so that nullified Reece James, and he tried, but Camavinga was probably one of their best players, if not the best player on the pitch. And I just think the quality that Real Madrid have, they don't even have to play, you know, they can play 60% and still beat teams. Chelsea tried. I'll give them their credit. I think Frank Lampard, yeah, some people might raise a few eyebrows and say, why weren't certain players? But it's easy to say that after the fact. I think they just didn't have that cutting edge in front of goal. They created chances, that Cucurella chance, you know, at the end of the first half. That was the one that needed to go in the back of the net, and things would have been different. But as the game went on and Real Madrid just seemed to grow into themselves, and a lot of the Real Madrid players today had an off day. They did, but they still won 4-0.
It was interesting because Chelsea, they did make changes at half-time. They came out and looked relatively strong as well, and N'Golo Conte had another chance. But Leanne, you said on commentary, Madrid could score. There's always that threat. And we did see it in the first half. They hit the bar. There was the Luka Modric chance saved by Kepa. And then out of nowhere, they did find that breakthrough just before the hour.
You could feel it as well, because this Real Madrid team, it's almost like they know their roles and responsibilities. They're consistent. Vinicius Junior, when he did get the boys, he had a relatively quiet game tonight.
Yeah.
But then look at the unselfish play he did for the first goal with Rodrigo. You know, he plays it to the right of him. Most players would have shot in that situation, and he knew to be composed and to play it to his right-hand side. So, you know, a lot of their players didn't even play at their maximum, but they are so good. And you can feel it from this Real Madrid team. It was always going to be difficult for Chelsea, because obviously they play with three more or less defensive midfielders to start the game, but that was to obviously stop Real Madrid, and I think it worked. But then it was the what next? Where is a goal going to come from?
Yeah.
Kai Havertz did his best, but he's not a number nine.
And when do you develop the team? When do you make those changes? It was an electric piece of play, wasn't it, from Rodrigo to skip past Chalobah? Possibly shouldn't have jumped in. You said
I think it's one of those ones where if you go for it, you have to make it. So.
If you miss it, it looks like an error.
Yeah, basically.
But you were talking about Vinicius Junior. We were talking about his tricks and skills on the ball, his pace and his eye for goal. But you feel, and you mentioned it before the show, Mark, his game intelligence has really come through this season.
Yeah, and it was exemplified by the way that he teed up Rodrigo for that goal, because he could easily have had a shot himself. It was a very congested penalty area. Plenty of Chelsea players back there all flinging themselves at him. But he still had the awareness and the composure to lay it off and put it on a plate for Rodrigo, who then stuck it away. And Valverde did the same for the second goal for Rodrigo as well, who was teed up beautifully by his teammates for his double in the game. But yeah, I think that, you know, in that moment, tight games, big games, Real Madrid might not have been at it. But then in that period of, 10, 20 seconds from when they went on that counter-attack, it was superb. It was top, top quality. And that's what they do in the big moments.
The changes, the attacking changes for Chelsea came at 1-0 down, came on 67 minutes, I think, with Sterling, Mudryk,
and João Félix.
And João Félix came on. And of course, we're all blessed with hindsight. We're well aware of that. It's a review show. But do you think Frank Lampard anyway could have made changes earlier, Leanne?
Potentially, but he doesn't have really the luxury of bringing a number nine off the bench, and that's what they desperately needed.
That's the primary problem.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you can change personnel, you can change formation, but it's difficult being a manager, because you want to stop Real Madrid from scoring, but you also want to score. So how do you do that? Now, he brought on Raheem Sterling, who hasn't been at his best since he signed for Chelsea, but none of their players seem to be performing at their maximum. So I wouldn't necessarily blame Frank Lampard for not bringing the players into the game, because I think it was almost too little too late by the time they came on. João Félix showed some good signs, and I'm a big fan of his, but I just think that Real Madrid are just too good. That's what it comes down to. They win this competition. There's a reason why. They seem to just get by in games when they're not even playing well. Courtois came up with a couple of good saves, but I just think Frank Lampard put the best team out that he believed. Mark touched upon it before. Conor Gallagher, his engine and all that type of stuff, but the quality just wasn't really there. But then you're playing Kai Havertz in the nine, which is not his best position, which he seems to have played there a lot in his Chelsea career.
I think that the interesting thing was, before the game, Frank Lampard, when he was asked about his selection, about it being a bit pragmatic, he said this was basically set up to try and keep us in the game, keep us in the tie. And he said that he thought that the game changers were going to be the players who came on from the bench. So it was almost a let's try and stay in it. And they were in it, and they should have been closer to getting back level on aggregate. I just wonder if he might be thinking, should I have rolled the dice a tiny bit earlier? Because he brought on the three substitutes just after the goal had been scored. I don't know if that was a reaction to going a goal down, or if he was planning to do it anyway and it just so happened he waited a bit too long.
Yeah.
It's such a gamble as a head coach. And you just think, well, if he'd made that change at 0-0, Real Madrid in a slightly different headspace, it might have been a different story, but we'll never know.
Chelsea now 7 games without a win, and the result was secured with that goal 10 minutes from time. Effortless from Valverde, almost like a training session, the way he just ran around Thiago Silva. And I think you sort of hinted at it, Leanne. It spoke to the composure and relaxed nature that Real Madrid show in a high-pressure fixture like tonight.
And the decision-making was exquisite. I mean, that Marco Cucurella one at the end of the first half, he just kind of hit it. Yes, he's not a centre-forward and he's not an attacking midfielder, but I think you look at you know, what Rodrigo did, how he was in that position, Vinicius Junior to play it to him. Valverde, I thought, had a brilliant game today. I think his driving with the ball was brilliant. And to just be able to freeze in that high intense moment and make the right decision is not an easy thing to do. And I said it was like a computer game. It was like playing a computer game, because you pass it across and, you know, it's almost like he could have hit it first time and he wanted Kepa to just bite a little bit and then he put it in the back of the net. But the composure, the decision making was exquisite.
It certainly was. Rodrigo with two goals. Real Madrid keeping the clean sheet again, and he did so often last season en route to winning it. But Thibaut Courtois back at Stamford Bridge once again just comes up with these really big saves, doesn't he? It seems to be one a tie from him in the Champions League.
Well, I think the thing about the game was he made one superb save right at the end of that first half. People will say Cucurella should be scoring that. It's on target and it requires a big save. He smothers it really well. But throughout the game, Chelsea had a few pot shots from the edge of the area that were travelling at a decent lick. And you always thought it wasn't a great finish. Actually, it was Courtois' positioning was always on point. He was always in the right place just to scoop it up and just to deal with the danger. Came out and won, you know, so many crosses in the air as well. Just an all-round, very composed, assured performance.
Let's hear from him. Courtois was asked about that save from Cucurella at the end of the first half.
At that moment, there's a low cross coming in. So you wait first if someone in the near post or in the middle of the goal tried to score. It didn't happen, so I think I was like half on the floor. I jumped up fast and I saw Cucurella with the ball. And I just thought to jump, make myself as big as possible, cover the near post with my legs and the other one with my hands and body. And I think it was a good save. Obviously, just before halftime, so you know it's really important to keep their 0-0. And if they go in halftime with 1-0 lead, you know the second half will be different. And now we kept our cool second half and we could score that first goal. And then you knew that it would be hard for them to come back. But they tried really well. I think they played a good game. And obviously for them, it's a bit harder at this moment. And when you kill that momentum of them during the game, obviously with the past results, you know, it will be harder for them to believe.
Thibaut Courtois, of course, the UEFA Player of the Match in last season's final against Liverpool. Tonight at Stamford Bridge, the UEFA Player of the Match was Fede Valverde after his tremendous performance in midfield. Leanne, can you break down a little bit more of this Camavinga left-back role? Because we've seen it a lot more. We've seen it in the Premier League. Midfielders playing as fullbacks playing in central midfield. What do you make about the young Frenchman and what he's doing in what is, to him, in a way, an unfamiliar position?
Well, it doesn't look unfamiliar to him, does it? It's interesting because in this day and age, fullbacks are almost like attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
You know, gone are the days where the fullbacks are there to defend. They're almost like a secondary centre forward. But he looks brilliant. He's such a great young player. And this is exactly what you want in a young player. You can put him anywhere and he does a job. Not just does a job, like nullified, arguably one of the best fullbacks in the world, in Reece James. He is, and Camavinga did not give him a sniff. It was a pretty amazing performance, but it's not something, I think it's maybe something we'll start to see more often, but obviously Carlo Ancelotti wants to fit his best 11 in on the pitch, and Camavinga factors into that, but not at the detriment of Valverde or Toni Kroos or Modric, because obviously you'd have to take one of those three out and you can't do that. But the fact that Camavinga can slot in there in the way that he does, he's such a good footballer. His brain, his ability, he's tenacious, he's fast, he's got it all really.
Okay, let's hear from another member of the Real Madrid team and another former Chelsea player, Antonio Rudiger.
Well, it's good to be back here, see familiar faces, but at the end of the day, I came here to do a job, and we finished it very well in both games, and this is the only important thing. It's normal that you expect them to come out strong. They play at home, and they came out strong. They had their chances. They didn't use them, and we capitalized from this. We kept our cool. I think we were in total control of the game.
Second half sub for Real Madrid, Antonio Rudiger back at Stamford Bridge, and Real Madrid are back in the semi-finals for the 11th time in 13 seasons. That is real pedigree. Okay, more on this game to come. Next to Italy, where Serie A leaders Napoli were looking to bounce back against Italian rivals Milan. The Rossoneri led 1-0 from the first leg. Dan Roebuck was watching.
For Milan, it's Giroud, their number nine, that steps up, left-footed. It's saved by Merritt, who throws himself across to the left-hand side and denies the Frenchman. What a moment here at the Maradona. Rafa Leao to come forward on the left flank. It's a terrific throw from Leao. He's away from Ndombele. He's up against Romani. It's Rafa Leao. It's Giroud! Milan lead Olivier Giroud after a wonderful run from Rafa Leao, who ghosted beyond three Napoli players before centering for Giroud. And it's the Rossoneri that lead by 2-0 on aggregate. Now that's Scheglia to make it 1-1 on the night and put the Naples club back in the tie. Terrific save, Mannion. It is Cavalaschiellia, plays it back to the near side. Raspadori once more, back inside the box. Osimhen's header finds the corner. And it's 1-1 on the night. Milan lead, 2-1 on aggregate.
They managed to get it over the line, Milan, into their first semi-final in 16 years, since 2007, when they went on to win it, beating Liverpool in the final. The UEFA player of the match was Rafael Laub. More from him and on him very shortly. But Dan joins Leanne and myself now to review this. Napoli had Victor Osimhen back, Dan, of course, and that was the major team news going into this one on the day. But it ultimately didn't prove fruitful, despite the fact Napoli started so, so well.
They were energetic, they were industrious, they weren't creating clear-cut opportunities, certainly in the opening quarter of this fixture, and Milan had to bide their time for their opportunities on the counter. But this felt very much like the first leg, in which Milan, even at home, played on the counter-attack, and they got their goal through Benassa, of course, at San Siro. This time around, they got their goal through Giroud after he'd missed that penalty. Following Leao, who'd been brought down by Mario Rui. You can't help think that maybe Victor Osimhen wasn't 100% fit, but also the fact that Kim Min-jae was missing and Andrea Anguissa was also absent. And, of course, in the first half, Matteo Politano, who was having such an impact over on the right-hand side for Napoli, he was taken off injured. Mario Rui was off injured as well midway through the first half. And just maybe, and when you look at Luciano Spalletti's side over the course of this season in Serie A, he doesn't rotate too often. He plays the same 11 an awful lot. He only tweaks, only rotates a little bit week to week in Serie A. And just maybe they've not quite got that squad depth to challenge both domestically and on the continent. And ultimately, Milan were too good for them here. And, you know, I think over the course of the tie, probably deserve to go through.
OK, well, let's break down the first major flashpoint, the penalty for Olivier Giroud, won by Rafael Leao.
Well, it was an interesting one because initially the ball broke to Brahim Diaz, who continued on the right-hand flank, and then suddenly everyone stopped, looked at the referee, and when we reviewed it, it was an obvious one because Leao was caught by Mario Rui, and Giroud, who hadn't missed a penalty this season for Milan, who's been in fantastic form. It's certainly a renaissance for the veteran striker, but on this occasion, Meret managed to throw himself across to the left-hand side and deny Giroud. And really, you felt maybe the gods are starting to shine on Napoli here because of that penalty save. You thought that that was Milan's chance gone, but it didn't prove to be the case.
Then the goal, the wonderful run by Rafael Leao. It's worth breaking down because it's probably the standout moment in the Champions League tonight.
He's key to the way they play. We talked about this, didn't we, ahead of the game. They're a counter-attacking side, and he's such a wonderful player. He had a bit of a sulk off the back of a World Cup that he wasn't really involved in that much for Portugal, and I think that he expected maybe a big money move away from Milan in January. That didn't quite come, and he had to knuckle down. He missed a couple of games before coming back into the side, but you cannot fault his contribution since he managed to get his focus back on the job in hand. He's been such an influence on this Milan side over the course of this season, and a wonderful run. I mean, real skill and pace. He's got power as well. He's got that athleticism, and he's very difficult to shrug off the ball. And ultimately, he's got the composure as well. He doesn't panic when he gets into those advanced areas. Saw Giroud in an awful lot of space, who had a simple task to put Milan in front just before halftime.
Olivier Giroud missed a penalty. He then missed a glorious chance. Obviously, it helps when it's put on a plate, but he doesn't seem like the kind of player that lets a moment like that faze him, even in a Champions League quarterfinal.
No, he doesn't, and I spoke highly of him already today. I'm a big fan of his, always have been. I think he always seems to, you know, score goals when it really matters. I think he's a good team player. He just seems to get on with it. You never really see him having a bad attitude. And I think he's a great goal scorer. A goal is a goal at the end of the day. But when you miss a penalty, it's not easy to recover from that within a game. And obviously we saw two penalty misses within the game as well. So it's fine lines, but I think Giroud always steps up and when they really need him.
We'll talk about that second penalty in a moment. Let's hear from the Napoli camp and a disappointed Stanislav Lobotka.
Of course, we really want to win this game and go through to the next round, and yeah, that was the target. So, of course, it's sad to go out on the tournament, and but the team tried everything, and I'm really proud of what we have done in the two games. Played good football, and it's just a small part that we couldn't get in.
Well, surely Serie A and the title is coming their way, but they're out of the Champions League tonight. Napoli, they were handed that lifeline down with that penalty after a handball given against Fikayo Tomori, but we talked about him pre-match. Mike Maignan coming up big once again for Milan.
He's an incredible keeper. You know that he made his debut for Lille when he was on loan from Paris Saint-Germain, came off the bench and saved a penalty in his very first appearance in Liga. Mm. And he's just got that happy knack of being one of those terrific keepers who can save penalties. And that's been the case throughout his career. But he's so much more than that. He made some really good saves. You can see how well he organises that Milan back line as well. And the fact that he was beaten very late on in the game didn't really take the shine off his performance. Yes, he's conceded in the Champions League for the first time this year, because of course he missed the group stages earlier this campaign, but he has been such a terrific addition. Now he's fully fit for Milan, and obviously they're through to the semi-finals. It could be a Milan derby in that last four. They are still fourth place in Serie A. They are not guaranteed a place in UEFA Champions League next season, so they know they've got focus both at home and on the continent to make sure that they're in this competition for next season. But for now, I think they can allow themselves a little bit of celebration. And if, look, Maignan stays fit and there's no reason to suggest that calf injury is going to be an issue for him from here on in, you tend to think that they've got the balance of their side right at the moment.
Yes, indeed. Dan, thank you very much. So Milan through with a 1-1 draw. They were on for a sixth clean sheet in a row in the Champions League before Victor Osimhen scored deep into added time. And I've got to read this one out. Alex Meret, the first goalkeeper to save a Champions League penalty against AC Milan since Jerzy Dudek saved Andriy Shevchenko's penalty in the 2005 shootout. Hashtag Matchday Live if you want to get in touch. Still to come, look ahead to Wednesday night's action in the UEFA Champions League.
UEFA Champions League Matchday Live with you, wherever you go. With audio commentary, real-time stats and much, much more, get the complete experience and download the official Champions League app today.
The quarterfinals of the UEFA Champions League conclude on Wednesday night. Two games to get to. Bayern 3-0 down. They're in Munich to take on Manchester City. That is our main commentary, by the way, on Matchday Live on Wednesday. Inter 2-0 up after a great win in Lisbon in the first leg, what will be 8 days ago from kickoff. Bayern City then our focus, first of all, Leanne Sanderson. Phil Foden, by the way, a bit of team news. Pep Guardiola says he will travel. He's been out for a little while, but would not confirm how many minutes he might play. But at the moment, City don't really need him. They've been superb without him.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Foden's a fantastic player, but the luxury that this Manchester City team have, they're all quality, and I think they're peaking just at the right time. Last week, I mean, that goal from Rodri was absolutely incredible, but look at Bernardo Silva's foot skills, you know, Gundogan, Jack Grealish, Haaland, the list could go on. All of them seem to be peaking just at the right time, and it's that this is the competition that's got away from them. It's the one that Pep Guardiola desperately wants to win with Manchester City, and it feels like it's happening. I mean, this Bayern Munich team, you can't write them off with the quality they have in Musiala, Sane, Mane. They have some Kimmich, they have some really good players. But the fact that it's 3-0, I think it's going to take a pretty, you know, big turnaround for them to throw that away, because City have been defending really, really well this year with John Stones as well.
11 goals in the Champions League this season for Erling Haaland. I think, I might have lost count, I think it's 46 after the weekend.
Not that many.
Yeah, and he's doing pretty well at the moment. Let's get some reaction from the Bayern camp preview to this one. Thomas Tuchel doesn't underestimate the challenge for his side in tomorrow's second leg.
It's pretty hard, I can tell you. It's pretty hard, and it's a huge mountain to climb. And that's why we need to be, you know, we need to believe. Of course, we believe in ourselves, but we don't want to be dreamers. Dreaming is, like, for me, always like, it's very close to sleeping. And if you cannot do one thing, you cannot sleep for 1 second. So we need to believe, and believing means that we have it in our own hands, and we need to make things happen. And we need to make it happen by performance and by team spirit and by energy. So the good thing is we're not alone. We have ourselves, we have our team, we have strong teammates. We can fight as a team. We have our spectators who will be ready, I think, to fight with us. And then we need to have a realistic level also. And if we look on this match, and the realistic level is like, if you just look at the top of this huge mountain, you maybe feel like overwhelmed, or you maybe think I will never reach the top. So taking it step by step, which means, I said it before, taking it half by half, and not get the challenge is tough enough. We don't need to make it more tough by constantly looking at the size of the mountain.
Lost track of how many analogies Thomas Tuchel pulled out the bag in that short clip, but he said also in that press conference it will be a miracle if they can turn it round. Benfica, they've got a big task going to San Siro, 2-0 down for the first leg, although Inter lacking some players at the back, Skriniar and De Vrij, injury concerns, especially De Vrij, who came off of the weekend ahead of that one. But a tough task, and we've seen how good Inter can be defensively in this competition as well. They just need to keep Benfica at bay.
Yeah, and obviously the fact that they're 2-0 up, I think, makes a massive difference. And I think Benfica just don't have enough. You know, they had a couple of chances late on last week with Ramos, but other than that, they didn't really create enough. And I feel like Inter Milan, they just look really, really good, and they look organised.
Yeah, they certainly do. OK, a quick reminder of how things unfolded on Tuesday night, by the way. And the victors of Bayern Manchester City will play Real Madrid after they won 4-0 on aggregate, 2-0 at Stamford Bridge on the night. And either Inter or Benfica will play AC Milan. We could have that Milan derby. Back to Stamford Bridge quickly. Let's get the post-match thoughts of the Chelsea interim manager, Frank Lampard.
We play really well for 60 minutes. And maybe it's normal after the goal is 3-0 and the tie. We make some changes to go for it. It's maybe normal how the game pans out to a degree, but 60 minutes really good. Really good chances at this level. You want to take them, you have to take them. So, you know, you don't want to praise performance too much when you lose at this level, because it's finite, you know, it's what it is. But of course, where we've been this season and where we are and what we've got to work towards at this club is a club that's been in this position and further in the competition many, many times. And in this moment, wasn't our night. Some players will take that tonight and understand what it is when they come back at this level.
Four defeats from four for Frank Lampard, but Chelsea know the real work's in the summer, where they try and work out what the game plan is long term. But Mark, Leanne, our commentary team for the game, your final thoughts on the match, starting with you, Leanne.
I think I agree with what Frank Lampard just said there. For 60 minutes, they did look like, I wouldn't say the better team, but they controlled the game very, very well. But ultimately, they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, and the defeat is a defeat at the end of the day. So Real Madrid, fair play to them. They're in the next round, and I think deservedly so.
I think that the fans would have taken something from the way they approached the game, the fact they gave Real Madrid a real good go for about 60 minutes of the tie. And I think most Chelsea fans wouldn't have expected them to go through this evening, but they'll be pleased with the fight that they showed.
And Real Madrid are good, aren't they?
Just a little bit.
OK, Leanne, Mark, thank you very much. Let's hear from the other game tonight. AC Milan's Fikayo Tomori was pleased to survive a frantic few minutes at the end of the game in Naples.
You know, we put in such a good shift, and I think, you know, right at the end, I think we just lost our man for when they had a few corners and they were chucking men forward. So it was just a split second that we didn't manage to cover all the spaces. But you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, to get through, I think even if someone told us at the beginning of the game we're gonna, you know, not keep a clean sheet but still go through, I think we'd have taken it. So really happy.
Tomori, a former Chelsea player, is into the semi-final with AC Milan. Dan was on this game for us. Dan, your final thoughts on what you saw in Naples?
Well, look, Napoli won't see this in a light that perhaps will shed anything on their season, because they're going to win the Scudetto. But Milan have just found a way, haven't they, here? And they are through to what could be a Milan derby for the semi-final.
Do you think it will be?
I think it will be. Look, Inter with that advantage over Benfica from the first leg, I think we will see the Derby della Madonnina.
Oh, very exciting. Indeed. Okay, we'll see. Thank you very much, Dan. Of course, we will be back on Wednesday, the 19th of April. You can hear the action on Matchday Live with full commentary from the Fussball Arena München, where Manchester City travel to face Bayern 3-0 up on aggregate. And we have updates from Inter 2 Benfica 0 on aggregate. Coverage from 8 p.m. CEST. And don't forget to download this very podcast shortly after every match night via your favourite podcast provider. But for now, from me, Rob Daly, and the rest of the Matchday Live team, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to UEFA Champions League Matchday Live.